All right, future nurses, get ready to dive deep into cardiovascular care for, your exams and your future practice. We're tackling angina and myocardial infarction today, pulling those must-know facts from your notes and textbooks. We'll connect the dots so it actually sticks.
Yeah, it's amazing how these conditions are linked, all about the heart and those blood vessels and how crucial they are for, providing top-notch nursing care.
Absolutely. So let's unpack angina and myocardial infarction. Both involve the heart's oxygen supply, right?
Exactly. Think of the heart like a powerful engine, right? It needs a constant supply of oxygen-rich blood delivered through the coronary arteries to keep it humming.
Okay, so the coronary arteries are like the fuel lines.
Yes. And angina, it's like that warning light on your car's dashboard is telling you, hey, there's something off with the fuel supply. Happens when the demand for oxygen in the heart muscle, exceeds the supply.
So the heart's basically saying, I need more fuel.
Yeah.
And that's usually because of narrowed coronary arteries.
Often, yeah. Due to plaque buildup, we call that coronary artery disease.
Okay, coronary artery disease leads to angina. And the symptoms, those can be all over the map, right?
Absolutely. Some people get just mild discomfort or pressure in the chest, while others, oh man, they experience intense crushing pain.
Yeah.
Radiates to the arms, the jaw, or the back.
Wow, that sounds scary. What triggers it usually?
Well, exertion or stress are common triggers, but honestly, even a big meal or going out in cold weather can bring it on.
Interesting. Okay, let's say I'm in the ER and a patient comes in describing chest pain. What should I be asking to pinpoint if it's angina?
Okay, first, you got to think like a nurse. Ask about the pain, right? How does it feel? Where exactly is it? Does it spread? What makes it better or worse?
Got it. So, location, intensity, and what makes it come and go, what else is important?
You're on the right track. Ask what triggers the pain, how long it lasts, and what brings relief. Does rest help? What about nitroglycerin? Those are all key clues to figuring out if it's angina or something else.
Right, we need to rule out other possibilities. So, after asking all the right questions, we need some tests too, right? Like an ECG.
You got it. An ECG shows us the heart's electrical activity, right? And during an angina attack, you might see changes like ST segment depression or T wave inversion.
I'm writing this down. ST segment depression, T wave inversion. Okay. What other tests might we do?
A stress test is pretty common. The patient exercises while we monitor their heart. Oh, and here's something super important for you nursing students. Women, they can have different results on stress tests.
Really? So knowing that could totally change how we approach a female patient's care.
Absolutely. For women, a stress echocardiogram can be more helpful. It actually looks at how the heart walls move.
Okay, so ECG, stress test, stress echo, and sometimes we need more, right? Like to actually see the arteries.
Exactly. That's where an angiogram comes in. We can actually visualize the coronary arteries. You see how much blockage there is. It's like having a roadmap of the heart's fuel lines,
Wow, that's pretty incredible technology.
Huh?
Okay, let's switch gears to risk factors. It's like a puzzle, right?
Yeah, a puzzle where some pieces are fixed, right? You've got age, gender, family history. Those are the non-modifiable risk factors. Can't change those.
Right, those are the cards you're dealt. But
Yeah.
there are other pieces we can influence.
Yes, that's where patient education becomes super important.
And as future nurses, this is where we come in, right? We need to be pros at explaining how smoking, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, lack of exercise, obesity, they all contribute to coronary artery disease and angina.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Helping patients understand how lifestyle choices impact their heart health, that's fundamental to nursing care.
And you know what? This is a good reminder for us too, even as busy nursing students. Gotta take care of our own hearts.
Oh, absolutely. All those all-nighters fueled by pizza, maybe not the best strategy in the long run.
Right. Speaking of serious situations, let's talk about myocardial infarction, better known as a heart attack. It's like angina's scary big brother.
Unfortunately, yeah. Angina is a warning sign, but a heart attack, that's a full-blown emergency. Happens when blood flow to a part of the heart muscle is completely blocked, and that leads to the death of heart tissue.
That's terrifying. Our textbook described the pain as heavy and vice-like, radiating to the shoulders, neck, jaw, even mentioned a feeling of impending doom.
It's a powerful description for sure, and it emphasizes how serious this is. The pain, it's usually much more intense and lasts longer than angina pain. And here's a key difference, for you nursing students. Nitroglycerin, it won't relieve the pain of a heart attack.
Okay, so if someone comes in with those symptoms, We need to act fast. Like, time is muscle kind of fast.
Exactly. Every minute counts. We immediately get an ECG, draw blood to check for cardiac markers like troponin that tells us if heart muscle is actually being damaged, and we start treatment ASA.
Okay, break it down for me. What's the first line of treatment?
We use the acronym MONA, morphine for the pain, oxygen to help the heart, nitroglycerin to potentially dilate other blood vessels, and aspirin to prevent further clotting.
MONA. Got it. That's a lot, but it sounds like it can be a real lifesaver.
It can. And remember, women often experience heart attacks differently than men.
Oh, right. That's crucial. So what are some signs we should be watching for in women specifically?
Well, men often have that classic crushing chest pain, but women might have, you know, what we call atypical symptoms like fatigue, shortness of breath, nausea, maybe back pain.
So it's not always the textbook presentation. We have to be really sharp and look for those subtle clues.
You're getting it. Recognizing these less obvious signs can be vital to get women the prompt treatment they need.
It's like putting together a puzzle, right? We need all the pieces to make the right diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens after that initial emergency treatment? What's next?
Well, there are other meds we might use, like beta blockers and ACE inhibitors. They help reduce the workload on the heart, prevent further damage.
Okay, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors. And sometimes we need to go further than medication.
Yeah, sometimes. Procedures like angioplasty, that's where we use a tiny balloon to open up that blocked artery, or even coronary artery bypass surgery. Grafting a healthy blood vessel to bypass the blockage.
That's intense.
Hmm.
Where do nurses fit into all of this? What are our key roles?
Nurses, well, you're critical throughout the entire process, from that initial assessment and rapid response in the ER to monitoring vital signs, giving meds, educating patients and their families, and providing that, you know, all-important emotional support.
So much more than just the medical stuff. It's about being there for the patient during a really scary and vulnerable time.
Exactly. And once the immediate crisis passes, we got to think about long-term care. That usually involves cardiac rehabilitation.
What does cardiac rehab look like? What happens there?
It's a multidisciplinary approach.
Mm-hmm.
It includes supervised exercise, education on making those lifestyle changes, and counseling to help manage stress and anxiety, basically helping them regain strength, confidence, and, you know, overall quality of life.
That's really inspiring. It shows how much nursing can impact a patient's entire journey with heart disease, not just in the hospital, but afterwards too.
It really does. As a nursing student, you're learning the skills and knowledge to be part of that journey, you know, to help patients understand their conditions, manage their symptoms, and live healthier lives. So we've talked about, you know, the immediate drama of a heart attack, but let's shift gears to something that's a bit more of a long-term player in the cardiovascular game. Hypertension.
Right. Hypertension or high blood pressure. We all know we should watch it, but what do those numbers on the cuff actually mean? What's going on in the body?
Imagine your blood vessels as a network of pipes, right? And your heart, well, that's the pump pushing the blood through. Blood pressure is basically the force of that blood pushing against the walls of those pipes. And when that pressure is too high, consistently high, well, it stresses the whole system.
Okay, so like if there's too much pressure in a garden hose, it could cause a leak or even a burst.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to avoid with hypertension management. Now, we've got two main types, essential or primary hypertension, which doesn't have a clear, you know, identifiable cause, and then secondary hypertension.
Secondary hypertension. That's the one that results from another medical condition, right?
You got it. Something like kidney disease, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So treating that underlying condition is key to controlling the blood pressure.
Makes sense. But what about essential hypertension? It's kind of a mystery, isn't it?
It is a bit of a medical mystery, yeah. But we know a lot about the risk factors. Just like with angina, there are some we can't change, genetics, age, and race, but there's a whole other set that we can influence, and this is where, you know, nurses have a huge role to play.
That patient education piece again, right? Empowering patients to take charge of their health.
Absolutely. We're talking lifestyle changes. Reducing sodium intake, maintaining a healthy weight, getting regular exercise, ditching the cigarettes, and watching the alcohol intake.
It all sounds pretty familiar, you know, healthy habits for overall well-being, but it's easy to forget how much these things specifically affect the cardiovascular system.
That's so true. Sometimes I like to use a metaphor to explain blood pressure. Tell patients to think of it like water pressure in a hose. Too high, it can strain the hose, you know, even cause it to burst. Same with blood vessels, if the pressure stays high for too long.
That's a great analogy. Really drives the point home. But sometimes lifestyle changes alone, they just aren't enough. right?
Unfortunately, that's true. Sometimes we need to bring in medication.
Right. And there are a bunch of different antihypertensive meds, each working a bit differently to lower blood pressure.
Yep. You've got diuretics, which help the body get rid of excess fluid, ACE inhibitors, which block a hormone that tightens up those blood vessels, beta blockers, slowing the heart rate and reducing its force, and calcium channel blockers, which relax the blood vessels.
Wow, that's a lot to keep straight. Definitely seems like it's important for nursing students to really understand how each med works, what to look out for, not just about giving the pill, but the whole picture.
You've got it. And here's a tip for you future nurses, because it can trip people up. ACE inhibitors, they can cause a dry cough as a side effect. Super important to tell patients about this, so they don't freak out thinking something worse is going on. Reassurance and education are big parts of our job.
Absolutely. Building trust with the patient, making sure they feel comfortable with their treatment plan. You mentioned hypertension is called the silent killer. Why is that?
Because it can be sneaky. Might not cause any noticeable symptoms for years.
Hmm.
All the while, it's quietly damaging the heart, blood vessels, kidneys, and eyes.
That's scary. It really highlights why regular blood pressure checks are so important, even if you feel fine.
Exactly. Early detection and consistent management are key. Got to empower patients to be proactive about their heart health, even without symptoms.
So true. And speaking of the broader impact, let's move on to peripheral vascular disease, or PVD, another condition that doesn't always get the spotlight, but it can really affect a patient's life.
You're right, it's a big deal. And what's fascinating about PVD is that often you can see the effects of uncontrolled hypertension and other risk factors right there on the patient's legs.
Like the body is sending us a visual message. Okay, so PVD, it basically means those blood vessels in the legs and feet are narrowing or getting blocked, right?
Right. Think of it like what happens in the heart with coronary artery disease, but this time it's happening in the extremities. We've got two main types, arterial and venous. Arterial PVD involves narrowing or blockage of the arteries, usually from atherosclerosis. Venous PVD, that affects the veins, often from blood clots or weak valves.
And you said we can often tell just by looking whether it's arterial or venous. That's so cool. What should we be looking for?
With arterial PVD, think about what happens when blood flow is restricted. The legs might look pale, maybe even bluish, especially when they're elevated, because they're not getting enough oxygen-rich blood. The skin might be shiny, hairless, and pulses weak or even absent.
Okay, so lack of blood flow, that makes sense. What about pain?
Oh yeah, they often experience pain, cramping, or numbness in their calves or feet when they walk. We call that intermittent claudication. It's like the muscles are screaming, "Hey, we need more fuel down here."
Feed me. Got it. So that's arterial. What about venous PVD?
Venous PVD, it's a different story. The problem isn't so much getting blood down to the legs, but getting it back up to the heart. So instead of being pale and cool, the legs tend to be swollen, and the skin might have a brownish discoloration around the ankles. You might see varicose veins too, those twisted, bulging veins just under the skin.
So it's like two sides of the same coin, right? One is about blood flow down, the other is about blood flow back up. And I'm guessing the pain is different too.
You bet. With venous PVD, it's more of a constant aching or heaviness, often worse at the end of the day or after standing for a long time.
This is so helpful. As nursing students, we need to be able to tell these two types apart. Any other key points to remember?
It all comes down to careful assessment. When you're caring for someone with PVD, ask about their pain, look for any skin changes, check those pulses, and really observe how their legs and feet look overall. You can learn a lot just by really looking.
Okay, so we've covered the different types of PVD and what to watch for. How do we actually treat it? What can we do to help these patients?
Well, just like with hypertension, lifestyle modifications are a big deal. Quitting smoking, managing weight, staying active, and for venous PVD, wearing compression stockings to improve blood flow.
What about meds? Are there specific drugs that can help?
For arterial PVD, you might see antiplatelet drugs like aspirin to prevent blood clots, as well as meds to lower cholesterol and blood pressure. For venous PVD, we might use blood thinners to stop clots from forming in the legs and medications to reduce inflammation.
So the meds really depend on which type of PVD they have. Seems like a lot to consider.
It is. And sometimes surgery might be necessary, depending on how severe the blockage or damage is. For arterial PVD, procedures might include angioplasty to open up a blocked artery or bypass surgery to create a new route for blood flow. For venous PVD, you might see procedures to remove a blood clot or repair damaged veins.
Oh, wow. This deep dive into PVD has really been eye-opening. I'm seeing how important it is to think about the whole circulatory system, not just the heart itself.
You've got it. Everything is connected. And as a nursing student, you're learning to see those connections, to think holistically, and apply that knowledge to give the best possible care to your patients.
It's pretty inspiring. Feeling a lot more confident about my clinical rotations coming up. Okay, we've covered a lot today, from the heart itself to those far reaches of the circulatory system. So much to learn about cardiovascular care, but it's really cool to see how, you know, everything connects and how important it is to think holistically.
It is. You know, one of the biggest things nursing students can do is really nail that patient education part.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Knowledge is power, right? When patients understand their condition, what they can do, they're more likely to make those changes, you know, the lifestyle stuff.
You're absolutely right. Empowering patients to, well, actively participate in their care. So let's say you're working with someone who has PVD. What are some key things you'd want to drive home?
Ooh, good question. Yeah. What would you tell them, you know, if you're explaining things to them?
One of the most important things, especially for those with arterial PVD, is being super careful with their feet. Meticulous foot care, really.
Why is that? I mean, besides the obvious, you know, taking care of your feet is always good.
Well, because PVD can reduce blood flow to the feet, even small cuts or blisters can turn into nasty infections, you know, ones that are really hard to heal.
Oh, that makes sense. And they might not even feel those injuries right away.
Yeah.
Right, because of the reduced sensation.
Exactly. That's why we need to teach them to really inspect their feet every day. Wash and dry them carefully, wear comfy shoes that fit well, and avoid going barefoot, even at home.
No flip-flops in the house.
Oh, got it.
It's all about prevention, right?
Exactly. Might seem like a little thing, but trust me, it can make a huge difference.
What about exercise? I know that can be tough for people with PVD, especially if they have, what was it called? The pain when walking.
Intermittent claudication.
Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge. But it's so crucial to encourage them to stay active, you know, as much as they can. Walking is great because it helps boost circulation. Even if they need to stop and rest a lot, something is better than nothing.
So even a little bit helps.
Yes. And we can help them create a personalized exercise plan, you know, one that works with their limits.
That's where the nursing creativity comes in, right? Adapting things to each patient's needs. Oh, and of course, we got to talk about smoking.
Absolutely. Huge risk factor for both arterial and venous PVD, and for a ton of other cardiovascular problems, too. It tightens up those blood vessels, damages the lining of arteries, increases the risk of clots.
It's crazy how one habit can have so many bad effects on the body.
I know, right? And we need to be realistic. Quitting smoking is super hard, but we can offer resources, support groups, meds to help them quit.
It's all about support, you know, being there for them every step of the way. This whole deep dive has really highlighted how interconnected everything is. You can't just look at the heart. Got to think about the kidneys, the blood vessels, lifestyle, support system, even mental health.
Couldn't agree more. It's all about that holistic approach. We're caring for a whole person, not just a disease.
Powerful stuff. So to all you future nurses listening, remember, you're learning how to care for real people with complex lives, you know, unique challenges.
And you have the power to really make a difference. Not just treating illnesses, but educating, empowering, and advocating for your patients. You're going to be amazing nurses.
Love that. Well, this deep dive into the world of cardiovascular nursing has been quite a journey. But remember, this is just the beginning of yours.
Keep learning, keep asking those questions, and never underestimate the impact you can make. So knowing what you now know about cardiovascular health, what's one thing you can do today to take better care of yourself or your future patients? That's something to think about. We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.